You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Penny Kelly back to the show. Penny is an author, teacher, speaker, publisher, personal and spiritual consultant, and naturopathic physician. In 1979, while working as a tool and process engineer for Chrysler Corporation, she experienced a full spontaneous awakening of Kundalini that completely changed her life. She left Chrysler and returned to school to study the brain, consciousness, perception, cognition, intelligence, and intuition. In 1987, Penny moved to Southwest Michigan and for 25 years has operated Lily Hill Farm and Learning Center. Today, she travels, lectures, and teaches a variety of classes and workshops. She maintains a large consulting practice, writes books and poetry, raises chickens, cattle, and grows organic vegetables and fruits. She is the mother of four children and has written six books, or more, The Evolving Human, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, Robes, Getting Well Again, Naturally, Consciousness and Energy Volume 1, Consciousness and Energy Volume 2, and Volume 3, Religion, Sex, Power, and the Fall of Consciousness. After all those raises, I guess it fell. Okay, you can find out more on her website at www.pennykelly.com. So let's welcome her back to the show now, and I apologize for coming in so late on the show, but there were technical difficulties. Hi, Penny, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine and glad to be here.
Yes, I'm glad we're all finally here after all. So the show will be a little short tonight because there was a little production problem at the station, but we can make up for it. We'll do another show. How's that?
That's fine. That's fine. You know, we'll make the best use of the time we can.
Exactly. And, you know, you are one of the most interesting people, and everything that I've heard from that you've shared has been really fascinating information. So I believe that we had talked about orbs in our last show,
yep.
And I think you were going to mention something about the orbs and what they were.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a good starting off place?
That's perfect, because when we ended the last show, I was just about to say, you know, what we had come to the conclusion of around orbs and how they formed, et cetera, and boom, it clicked off. It was like, oops, I guess we'll have
right,
to finish.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, and that was it was it seemed like it was going to be a really good conversation.
Yeah. So let me just back up a step and say that Dr. Levengood and myself talked a lot about orbs and, you know, and the origin of them, and we examined pictures and all kinds of signs of intelligence. We watched, you know, I think on the internet we saw a cat interacting with an orb, could obviously see the orb, and the orb was obviously aware of the cat. People sent me pictures, and over time, you know, some of those pictures would be one or two orbs in the room. Some of them there would be thousands and thousands.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Long story short, after a lot of thinking and talking, you know, Levengood eventually died, and we still hadn't answered the question. But as I continued to work with that whole question of what are orbs, it really became pretty obvious that if you assume that there are forms of light in the universe that we can't see, that are not within the range of frequencies that our eyes can see,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of that light is, I'm going to call it unformed.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, you know, there's light, it's unformed, et cetera, it exists in the universe, we are swimming in it. And mm-hmm. then you go to, I'm going to use Cliff High as an example.
He's called
the Alta Report.
And yeah,
for those
fun.
We have never listened to Cliff High, he goes out and he samples thousands of words being used on the Internet and has been able to predict what is going to happen in the world years ahead of when it's happening. And depending on, I'm not sure how he sets it up, some things he can say are going to happen immediately, which is within the next 3 or 4 weeks. Some things are intermediate and some things are longer term. And he is able to pinpoint the issues, the language, the problems, the successes, et cetera. So what is he actually doing there but sampling or providing an example of what happens when we talk? We literally, through talk, through language, create the future, and that it's a mass future, group future, if you will.
Mm.
And I have come to the conclusion after watching the kinds of orbs and things that appear. Some of them are angry when the talk has been angry. They have an angry look or face in them. Some of them are big, some of them are little. It depends on the emotion. I think that orbs are the conversion of what might be called dark light or dark matter into a plasma that then begins to self-organize within our reality and move the reality in that direction.
Mm.
And so there's been lots of talk about, lots of stuff about orbs. But the fact of the matter is that language is a conversion mechanism for turning dark matter, dark light, or unformed light, into the beginning stages of matter, and that's what orbs appear to be. And they reflect, the more conversation and the more emotion that is in a room, the more orbs you're going to see. So, and people have sent me photos of neighborhoods in the east, along the east coast. The air is so thick with orbs that you can barely see the sidewalk and, the yards along the street and the cars and things like that. It's just filled with orbs. And that's an accumulation of energy. Same thing in the Middle East.
Middle East, huh?
Yeah, those orbs affect us eventually over time. They build up and they aggregate. They are self-organizing, and that's one of the factors that Levengood, kept coming up with again and again. When you have a plasma and you disturb it, a plasma is a group of particles that seem to act together as one. You can go in and disturb that, and it reorganizes itself. It is self-organizing, and that is just, I think, an orb is the same. It's been converted, and it does have an effect once it has been brought into existence, and we do that through language.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. It's something to think about. I don't have any more proof. But I continue to watch, I continue to read, I continue to look at that whole issue, and so far I haven't found anything that contradicts that. So, and I think science is getting, better and better as we go along. It's amazing. We have a whole new science paradigm that is not obvious and evident to a lot of people. We all need to go back to school and study science again, because all of the stuff that we learned in high school and college is outdated and has been superseded.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a whole new realm of information with a whole new set of possibilities. And in my humble opinion, right now in this world, we need some new possibilities.
Yes, indeed. Well, many scientists are claiming that they have verified about 11 dimensions, and then there are also verifications of numerous, if not infinite, parallel dimensions. So it's conceivable that both of those exist and other forms of dimensionality that we're not even aware of yet.
Yeah, I tell you what, there have been, I spent 6-7 years just studying what I call planes and dimensions, planes of existence, dimensions of existence. There are far more than 11. There are thousands.
Right.
They are so numerous that I consider it almost silly to say there's 11.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I've done a lot of travel and a lot of research and a lot of experience in other dimensions.
Oh, yes.
You know, and there's 11, it's like, what?
And okay. You've had other dimensional beings show up in your dimension.
Yeah, I do
which
have.
Which must have been, you know, which was interesting. I read the book, and I really appreciated your truthfulness about it, that you really didn't care for the visitors right away, and it took some time for them to grow on you, but and then they were they were trying to give you information about the future, and now that I've mentioned it, how many of the visions did they share with you that have actually come true already?
Quite a few. I've lost count. Almost all of it is coming true. Let me just list a few that, you know, off the
top
of my head.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the major ones was the Trade Center coming down. You know, and another one that I thought was just so weird was that governments would begin to give away tracts of land to indigenous peoples to take care of, because the government could no longer take care of that land anymore. And indigenous people said, absolutely. You know, they would take good care of it. They would return it to a more pristine condition.
Right.
And there have been two groups, one in, I think, one big group in Russia, probably 10 years ago, were given all of their original land back again, and they are busy restoring and cleaning it up. And
wow.
I think a group in, I think it was Ecuador, somewhere down in South America, same thing. And in a small way, by not interfering, that has happened, you know, in other places. You know, the whole issue around food, that I thought they were being totally, they were going too far. They said people are going to begin to starve to death. There's going to be severe malnutrition. A lot of people are going to die. And I was like, what? No way.
Right.
You know, and I didn't know anything about nutrition or food at that point. And now I see it everywhere, you know, I wrote about it. I was so dismayed. I wrote about, you know, in my book, Getting Well Again Naturally.
Oh, nice.
I listed five stages of degeneration once a family or an individual leaves the soil, leaves good food, and starts eating processed stuff. Gosh, let's see, what else? All the, you know, the governmental stuff, all of the educational stuff, all of the relationship stuff that they talked about. You know, they didn't really like, they said they couldn't support marriage. They couldn't support educational systems as we practiced them. They thought that our, you know, our healing systems were absolutely primitive. They thought that our ability to manage our consciousness was just non-existent.
Yeah,
and they did demonstrate a couple of things that, you know, I thought were absolutely magical. You know, there was an old building, and we stood in front of it, and they said, now watch, because you will eventually be able to do this. You, your entire people, your people will learn to do this.
Oh.
And they regenerated that old building until it looked like it was just built yesterday.
Wow.
It was stunningly beautiful. And I did not understand how they did that at the time. Now I know. The more that I studied plasma and plasma physics, the more that I understood what they did.
Ah.
Yeah, you have to be able to manipulate plasma and the frequencies that make up a plasma or that hold a plasma together. And when, once you do that, oh my, you can do almost anything with any material. You can manifest. They have these manifestation chambers. Those are now coming into reality. IBM took out their first patents a few years ago on, they didn't call it a manifestation chamber, but, I mean, they very carefully described, we are aggregating frequencies, and we do believe that we will be able to create matter, and
oh,
they
course.
Will.
And so, programmable matter.
Absolutely.
They have that already. And another thing is that the plasma fields that you were just talking about was something that you, Patty Greer, and I got into a discussion about separately.
Yeah.
About regenerating. They discovered the way the crop circles were made. And the machine that does that, if it's allowed to get out, creates, you probably have the percentages, but a huge percentage increase in production of food. The quality of the food is higher, and as I recall, it was, there was another factor that was, you know, beneficial. So
yeah, there's quite a few. There's quite a few factors. So
that exists right now, right?
Yeah, Levin Good figured out how to duplicate the energies of crop circles. And that was really almost accidental because he was working with seeds. He was a biophysicist. What that means is he was working with plants, living things, et cetera. He was on the side, had offered to study, you know, plants and materials from crop circles. And eventually, what he realized was that the seeds that were coming in as part of the plants hit by crop circle energies had the same or had, you know, these amazing qualities and similarities to this experiment that he had done some years earlier in which he took some seeds, and you always take 30 seeds, and he put them in, it's called a Widmanstätten machine. It's a German name. And he hit them with these energies. And then he tried to germinate them, and the seeds, of course, wouldn't germinate. And he was like, well, I didn't think they would grow because they just got hit with these massive amounts of energy. But he didn't germinate all the seeds. I guess he had put quite a few on this plate and hit them with this energy, but he took 30 of them and tried to germinate. Nothing happened. He left the rest sitting on a corner of the desk. 2 months later, he went to, check out. Though he was going to clean. I guess that's what he was going to do, is clean his bench and his office. And he said, this little voice said, don't throw those out. Don't throw those out.
Oh.
And so he said, I had learned many, many years ago to listen to that little voice.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, he thought, well, let me get some germination paper. He put him in the germination paper. He got it wet. He put him in the germination chamber. And 2 days later, he looked in and he said, OMG, they were growing. They had all germinated. They were growing like gangbusters. And, you know, the long story short, after quite a bit more experimentation and asking himself, what is going on? He realized that the seed was a living system, and that when it was hit with that amount of electromagnetic energy, it reorganized itself completely. Chemically, it reorganized everything about itself so that if it ever encountered that kind of energy again, it would be ready to handle it. And
wow.
So what a seed does, it changes its chemistry. It boosts the amount of energy that it can deal with. It it also, how do I say this? it develops this tremendous resistance to drought, to floods, to mold, to mildew, to bacteria, to heat, to cold. And it develops this capacity to, because of its own chemical reorganization, to get rid of toxins and detoxify itself. Ooh. And then when you germinate it, it takes off like a shot, and it produces anywhere from 30% to 400% more crop.
Wow.
And it and that crop has more nutrition. It is it has better texture, and it has extraordinarily good taste. Sweet, very sweet.
That sounds wonderful.
You know, we did a lot of experimenting, and I grew out, you know, in my garden, I grew out the seeds, you know, one section of treated carrots and one of untreated. Same with corn, with beans, with peas, with cucumbers, with zucchini. That was a mistake with the zucchini. But just an amazing, amazing difference in the amount of crop that you got, in the size of the plants. Unbelievable. I'm just extraordinary. You know, green bean plants with leaves that are 8 and 10 inches across, and they're normally 3, 2, 3, maybe 4.
Right.
So, you know, there was just so much possibility and potential just in the seeds, you know, and then we treated water, we treated ourselves, you know, and noticed huge increases in our energy. So, and when I say huge, I mean like 1,100% more energy.
Wow.
And that's that, when you have when a human body develops the capacity to channel more energy through it, you have better health. You have a regeneration of organs and systems. You have more expansive consciousness. You have more information available to you. It's an extraordinary effect. And you can track whether you're degenerating or regenerating. So, there was really quite a bit of research that we did. We worked on, you know, on plants all sorts of plants. And, you know, in water, you could treat the water and then water the seeds with that water that you treated and get the same effect.
Wow.
And you treat the water and get the same effect.
Well, you know, unfortunately, as you know, and the listeners probably know too, there is a kind of a monopoly on corporate farms, and they're locked into pesticides and genetic modification and so on and so forth. So it seems as if anything that offers a really great viable alternative is going to be could have difficulty seeing the light of day, because that's what has been the traditional occurrence with anything that has been found to be progressive and inventive, free energy, and you know, just a number of other inventions that exist.
Mm-hmm.
And are under corporate control and being used. So my biggest concern would be, you know, in safeguarding the people who are trying to bring this technology out, because every time somebody tries to bring out free energy, something mysterious happens, because there's such a big investment in oil and, you know, propane and the rest of it, that the people who are making so much money off of all these things are just simply not going to allow the planet to progress and get off these archaic forms of pollution, unfree energies. And so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Now, in the Russian pyramids, I was reminded that Valery Yuzurov, he's on Facebook, is making real pyramids, and he's using sacred geometry and crystals and a lot of other different technologies that are organic. And they're building a number of pyramids in Russia. and they are testing the results that it will have on non-GMO vegetables being stored in there. And they're creating a control group of two groups of children, one that will eat those vegetables and the others won't.
Yeah.
And so they want to see which, I mean, I'm already pretty certain we can figure out which one will be better. but, you know, until they actually do the come out with the results, we won't officially know. But that's another thing. And then you remember the Ringing Cedar series with Anastasia in Russia?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Well, that was talking about giving the land back to the people. And, of course, Anastasia had hundreds of innovative ways of manipulating matter and seeing things at a distance. I mean, all the things that we probably have done in the past and probably could do and will do in the future.
Yeah.
And they're fascinating books, and I'm pretty sure that that's based on viable information.
Yeah, I think you're right on. We did quite a bit of research with pyramids and pyramid energy in the lab.
Oh.
Learned a lot and came to the conclusion that, you know, a couple of other Russian scientists had concluded, and that was that space is anisotropic. The assumption has been for, you know, for the past however many years, that when you get out of the atmosphere, that space is, it's the same. Every cubic inch is the same as every other cubic inch. What we discovered was that is absolutely not the case. There are rivers and streams and whirlpools and, you know, and intersection points that, you know, what I've seen just my own self. When you have a kundalini experience, when anyone has a kundalini experience, one of the things that begins to unfold is your clairvoyance. That I have seen some, you know, I've been able to see matter all the way down to the quark. At the time, I did not know what I was actually looking at. I was just watching it and noting its behavior, and I had seen it dozens of times, and I've one day said to Dr. Levengood, well, there's this one level of, you know, of existence, and I described it, and I drew some pictures, and I tried to show him how it was moving, and he said, oh, that is a perfect description of a quark. Well, some of the other things that I have seen are the intersection of these streams within space and what happens and how light is formed. And it's the universe we live in. I actually want to do a lecture and put it out on my website that really talks about the true nature of reality and what's happening. And, you know, to kind of go back to the pyramids, we discovered that they aggregate energy and they move it in a what I'm going to call typically going to be a left-hand rotation. At a certain point within that pyramid, direction is very, very important. If your item is oriented north and south, you know, you'll get one effect. If it's oriented east and west, you get another effect. If it's oriented at one of the, like, north-northwest or east-southeast, you get very minor, almost no effect. And so there's lots of little things about pyramids that, you know, are extraordinarily interesting and very useful. We used it, and I did some research on my own. You know, we used it to preserve things so that, you know, it didn't get moldy or mildewed, and could be rehydrated with all of its flavor and good condition.
Wonderful.
Yeah, there's
a
lot.
Well, you know, there was a big fad a while back, probably it might have been in the 60s and 70s, but I remember pyramid power. And people were building, you know, pyramids to sleep under and meditate under and sharpen razor blades, and it was just a big thing, and then it just all of a sudden died out.
Yeah, you do get a change in consciousness in a pyramid, if your head and heart are aligned just right and they're at a certain height, it has to be a certain height within the pyramid, and you do enter altered states as a result. So, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, pyramids are pretty, they're pretty mysterious still. I don't think we know half or even a tenth of what we could know.
Yes.
But that's, you know, that's some of the new technology actually goes way beyond pyramids. And, you know, and to go back to your statement about a lot of stuff being suppressed. Yeah, it has been. You know, I think we have had, without realizing it, we've had somebody's heel on our neck for the last, you know, for a long time.
A long time, yes.
And so there hasn't been the natural evolutionary progression of changes and discoveries. And I think I don't think people here in the U.S. realize how far ahead the rest of the world is in terms of technology, in terms of energy, in terms of news and what's real, and in terms of health. The U.S. is so, I feel so bad for, you know, the people in the U.S.
Way at the bottom. Well,
yeah,
of course,
they are at the bottom, just about at the bottom. And, you know, and the bad thing, or the thing that's really hard to overcome is that, you know, everybody thinks this is the greatest country since sliced bread. Well, you know.
Right. Well, that's, a few people would disagree with that, I think.
Well, you know, you have to go out of the country and see what's actually happening, and then you come back, and it just makes you cry. And I think this year is going to change a lot of things, is changing a lot of things, and this is the turning point. When I was with the little men in brown robes, you know, this was the period that they said, this is where you make it or break it.
Oh,
it started in 2016 and ends in 2021. What we do, and they said 2017, 18, and 19 are the critical years. Here we are.
Yes, and it felt to me like 2017 was kind of the beginning of the critical years. And 2018 is actually feels like the kind of a ramping up of that. And 2019, of course, as you said, would indicate that that would be a continuation of these changes.
Yeah, I think we're going to see massive. I have, because I've known what was coming, you know, I could, I could see the problems getting worse and worse as we entered 2015.
Yeah.
And, you know, and every software I'd say something, and people would kind of like, well, what, you know, what are you talking about? And
Right. And now today you could probably say it, and people would understand you and probably agree.
Yeah.
But there's a whole breakaway civilization. In fact, you, the robes mentioned it to you that they wouldn't be discovered. They'd leave. Because that's what a breakaway civilization does. They sequester away technology that's been developed privately, or, you know, through the misuse of funds that come from us or from a number of different ways. And they are literally able to break away from the planetary system that they're living on.
Yeah, so, and that really is important.
Yeah.
Let me just make a comment about that. If you have an ability to get away from the planet, the impact that that has on consciousness is that it really, you don't need a planet anymore. And we are, you know, the breakaway people are already off planet. They're already traveling in interstellar space. They already have vehicles that can do amazing things. And, you know, we're not the only ones here either.
Right.
And so there's a whole variety of stuff happening on other planets in the solar system. And here's the rest of us. We're on the planet. You know, and sometimes I think to myself, God, we're all as dumb as a box of rocks. We're not getting it.
Right.
So, you know, it bothers me. And then I think, okay, just keep on teaching. Just keep on, you know, bringing people along. So when I saw that cryptocurrencies, and I might have mentioned this last time, but it bears repeating.
Okay.
When I saw that cryptocurrencies were beginning to be very, very popular, I was absolutely overjoyed because it's one of the symbols that says we are beginning to value non-physical items. That's a turning point in terms of our ability to let go of the planet. Now, we cannot let go of the planet until we get healthy enough to actually, you know, you have to be healthy in order to be really smart and really creative.
Right.
But you're going to go down.
Right, right.
The food has to have high-density nutrition in it in order for us to reach a peak of what I call high immune function, high creative function, and high consciousness function.
Yes.
We don't have that food, we're just going to lumber along, get overweight, get depressed, et cetera. And so we really have, we're at a point now where we're seeing, and everybody else in the world is looking at Americans and going, oh, what happened to those poor people? But we're seeing what has happened to us. We've got an epidemic of cancers, of heart disease, and especially of diabetes and ADHD and now autism.
Yes.
What can you do with a people when everybody's sick and tired and, you know, you don't get much creativity or much forward thinking out of that? They're trying to deal with, you know, what's right in their face.
Well, I think that's kind of the point.
When you have this cryptocurrency come along,
yeah,
that's like a red flag that says, come on, people, it's time to get healthy enough to begin to look at what are the symbols that are coming at us. What is the symbolism of our reality telling us? One thing is plasma energy, where the plasma energy is something that is generated using electromagnetics.
Okay.
Let me not say it that way. That would be technically incorrect. That requires a whole other explanation. But when you have an energy that is not dependent on oil or coal, and you have a money that is not dependent on gold or silver.
Penny, apparently we're out of time.
Oh,
I guess
okay.
Because we came in so late. So let's remember where we left off. And I also wanted to ask you what you thought of the fifth dimension, the popular theories that everybody's going to go to the fifth dimension. So
okay.
I want to thank you for coming back.
Want to bring that up next time?
Yes, we'll set that up for next time.
Okay, all right. Continue the conversation about moving from a planet-based civilization to what I'm going to call a space-based or an energy-based civilization, because we're just now looking at that door.
Wonderful. Well, Penny, I'm sorry we didn't get to talk as long as we had wanted to, but we have run out of time, and I love talking to you, and you and I will privately set up our next show for, let's say, within a month or so.
Okay.
Okay, thanks again, and good night, everybody.